to the TetraCast, episode 345, recording on Star Wars Day, May the 4th, 2024. Spoilers, there's going to be no Star Wars on this podcast episode. And it's also like near the end of Golden Week in Japan, so it's kind of light on the news front as well, because we didn't, you know, get much news from on the Japanese end of things, and not a lot of announcements or things on the Western side as well. So a relatively quiet week, which is okay. You know, there was a lot of big releases happening recently, and we all deserve a little bit of a break. Joining me on this podcast, by the way, I'm Joshua Torres. I'm your host. Brian, your usual podcast host, is out on a wedding. I am substituting, and joining me is Adam Vitali.
Hello.
James Galizio.
Hey, folks.
And Chow Min Wu.
How's it going?
So, here we are, start of May, and we don't have a lot of new RPGs to talk about, which is fine. Most of them released, and then there'll be some releases here and there this month. But relatively on the lighter side of things in the RPG space. Starting off this week, Chow, you've been wanting to talk about this game, or like, there's too many other RPGs. What you want to talk about isn't an RPG. Save it for a lighter RPG podcast. And here you are with Slave Zero X. And from what I understand, I've seen a few trailers here and there. There's like a side-scrolling platformer, and people talk about how difficult this game is. And you're talking about last week, like how Stellar Blade is a baby game for baby gamers. And then real gamers play Slave Zero X. Tell me about Slave Zero X, Chow.
Okay, so has anyone played the original Slave Zero? Probably not, right?
I've seen it, but I've never played it.
Okay, so Slave Zero is like this third-person shooter where this guy gets on an exoskeleton called Slave Zero to kind of dethrone like some totalitarian government of some sort, right? It's some very obscure game, but people say it was really good, but it wasn't very successful, and this other company bought it. And what is it? This other company that bought the rights to it decided to make a prequel to it, and that's basically what Slave Zero X is.
Okay, so there's not following up the event, so you don't need to have prior knowledge of what Slave Zero was going into this. They're just like, hey, this is kind of, we got the IP, we like the IP, want to do something cool with it, so we'll make an origin story. It's a different genre?
Yes, it's also a different genre. So what this game is, it's basically like a beat-em-up game, but it has like fighting game mechanics in it, and then it's basically Strider 2. Have you played Strider 2?
Yeah, I played Strider.
This game is basically Strider 2 made like in the modern era, basically. So you get graphics where like the background are those low polygon 3D, but the sprites are like, it's like Guilty Gear like.
It's like super detailed.
Yeah, right. And then you have like fighting game commands, right?
For your character.
But it's like simplified to like modern controls. So you just press like forward this direction, you do that move, right?
Modern controls. Yes. No motion inputs?
No motion inputs.
Okay.
But you also get like, what is it? You also get like Izuna drops too, like from like Dare Alive, so you could like attack this person into midair and you could like Izuna drop by
Ninja Gaiden.
So it has like a lot of influence from other games, right? But this game is really cool. It's how do I even start with this premise? It's basically about this guy that decided to steal a Slave Zero suit that looks like fucking Hakumen from Blaze Blue.
For people who don't know, definitely go check up its Steam page. It definitely has a distinct look, and the character design is really, really cool.
I think the graphic designer said it's not based on Hakumen. It's actually based on Justice from Guilty Gear.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it's
similar. They're pretty similar. They're pretty similar, so I guess.
Yeah. Basically, I think he was fed up with the government. I think they kind of got his boyfriend killed, so our main character is not... And he basically decided to go on a killing spree, basically, right?
Okay.
That's basically the premise of the story.
Right.
And basically, as soon as he fights like this first boss, it's like, man, this person fights someone like I really know from before, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't really know who it is, but, you know, the story is kind of like hinting towards that boyfriend of his back in the day, right?
Right.
And then you basically fight, like, the four calamities, which is, like, these government authorities that this dictator has put up. And that's basically the entire story. And, like, the premise of each level is that you fight each of these calamities, and it's, like, they're constantly shit-talking to you, to your main character. Like, there's, like, always, like, this banter between you and the boss, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? I think, like, a good example would be, like, Kirby Superstar, you know, like, the Revenge of Meta Knight level, where, like, villains are constantly, like, shit-talking to you. And this, like, the first one is Fortin. It's like, it's kind of like Senator Armstrong. He's like all like patriotic about America and shit. Uh-huh. And he's like, how dare you to ruin our system and shit. And when you like try to fight him, it's like, let me teach you the warrior way of the quarterback from ancient America.
Yes. Historically speaking, that's how it was. Yep. 100% accurate.
And then it's like, okay, so that's, like, the first guy. And then, like, the second one's a sniper. And I guess it's, like, you basically shit-talk her to, like, come and fight me one-on-one. And she eventually's like, okay, fine, I'll stop being a coward. That's how you, like, fight the second one.
Okay.
And the third one is kind of, like, all, like, angelic, kind of like an angel something kind of thing. And I forgot what the fourth one was. Because it's been, like, a couple weeks since I played it, right?
Uh-huh.
But it's like you had to fight all the calamities before you had to like fight the main bad guy, which is the Sokan, which is like the main bad guy of this game. And how the story's kind of like hinted is like, oh, it's like he gets away, so it kind of lines up with the, you know, like the sequel, right? Or like the original game back in the
obviously,
day.
Obviously,
right?
Yeah. So like, there's still technically quote unquote canon. Like, you want to make sure that like there's still enough space for, you know, the original Slave Zero events to like make sense.
Yeah. You know. So, okay. But I also heard they might make, like, a reboot of, like, the original in, like, this kind of gameplay genre.
Okay.
So, I think the biggest problem with, like, this game is more like, okay, it's a very short game, okay? Because it's, like, designed, like, 90s-style arcade. You could probably beat it in one sitting. Which
the,
is, like,
the length that you get out of it is, like a kind of trial and error. It's, like, it's difficult because you have to learn what, like, you're to expect, basically.
Yeah, it is a difficult game, but you could probably beat it in, like, 3 to 5 hours, because there's only like 6 levels. And then when you beat it, you're like, oh, it's like, what do I do now? Do I just keep replaying the game to get a better score, or do I just not play at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it has like that Devil May Cry type scoring system where you're like trying to do combos and trying to keep like things up, and it's like, oh, you're doing it more stylish, and now you get like an S rank from clearing this phase of the stage, right? But you know, not people are into that, right? And for the price it's asking for, it's kind of like, oh, it's like people don't feel like spending $30 on a short game these days, right?
Yeah.
But
there's nothing else that unlocks like when you beat the game. Just those levels, you can go for a higher score, and that's it. There's nothing else you can do.
While you're clearing levels, you get filters. Okay, so every level that you clear, you get like a filter. So you get like a, what is it, like a scan line filter, an infrared filter, like when you play the level. So it makes your game look like, I don't know, like an old school CRT, or you could like change a game that look like you're playing on under a Ritual Boy scope, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that's like kind of like the unlockables you get, or different colors for your characters. If you find like secret areas, you could fight like a gold version of these mobs, and you defeat them. They also drop like lore books so that you know more about the lore. But like other than that, I don't think there's like replay value unless you're like really invested in like trying to get like the perfect score.
Is there like for stage progression, is it sort of like Mega Man style where it's almost like you have to get to the like, boss in one shot? Or I mean, there are some checkpoints in older Mega Man games. Or is it like you have to restart at the start of the level when all your lives are...
This game has usually a level has like 3 phases, right? So you'd be like restarting at the start of that phase.
Okay.
And you can easily tell by which phase it is, because it will be like kind of like an eye catch as soon as you get through the phase, and the music changes, so the tempo gets faster as you get through like the later part of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like the soundtrack, because the soundtrack just kind of like has this tempo that keeps going faster as your, you know, progression to the level.
Is it remixed, or is it a resample to go faster with the same track?
It's a remix that goes a little bit faster, you know.
Okay. Interesting.
It's very interesting to hear. So, yeah, no, it's kind of like this game. I know it's not much to, like, bank on, but it's a very short game, you know? I think it's, like, highly worth checking out if you, you know, on something like that.
Uh-huh.
I think the other flaw that comes with this game is probably the later half of the game isn't as, like, well-designed as, like, the first half. Because, like, later on, it's just, like, it's, like, non-stop, like, enemy, like, blobs keep coming in, like, non-stop, right? And then the last boss is probably the worst in this game. It's like there's like no hit stun or like you can't really see like particle effects, so you're not even knowing that you're hitting the boss or not.
Nice.
And you're like, okay, when is he dead? I don't know, because there's no life bar, you don't see that, and then it's like, oh, it's like, okay, he's dead, but I don't know like all my hits landed on this guy or not, right?
Yeah.
So I heard they made like bugs to like, or I heard they like made several patches to like beef up this game a little bit more over the few months that it came out, but I'm not sure like how much improvement they make. So because I think I played it around like weeks ago, and I think
there was maybe it's a hard ask too, like, because you're done with the game, you beat it, like, it's unless they like do something wildly new with it, you have very little reason to go back and
play it again. But yeah, like this is kind of like a pretty short experience, and there's also like a, was it like a training mode, so you could practice your fighting game style combos, right?
That's cool.
And
like, do you learn new moves as you progress through the game, or is like you have, kind of have everything from the get go? And
you kind of have everything from the get go, but as you like beat some stages, like you get like money, and that money can be used to like upgrade your characters. Like, oh, does he have more HP? Does he have more of this bar that activates his double trigger? Right?
Aha, uh-huh, RPG, right? No, I'm just kidding.
He has HP. Okay, he has HP.
Huge.
But it's like the devil triggers is actually like kind of weird, because it's like I think it's like the right trigger button that you use the devil trigger in this.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is like if you have like a quarter of a bar and you press a direction, it does like the Roman cancel from like Guilty Gear games instead.
Oh, that's funny.
So you're like, ooh, it's like I had, it's like this devil trigger is kind of, I keep pressing Roman cancels by accident because I'm, like, in the heat of combat, right? Or something like that, right? You had to, like, stand still to get, like, the double trigger activated, right?
Can you do like, dumb shit like dust loops or lightning loops?
You could do dumb shit like that if you're good at this game. Apparently, okay. There's, like, some combo videos and people do, like, over 60 hits, you know?
That's pretty cool.
There's lots of creative way. And I think how the game tries to teach you is like, okay, here's a mob right here, and it's going to do this really annoying thing. So you're kind of forced to learn through combat how to deal with this annoying thing. There's no tutorial. It's just like, oh, doing this guy's just right here. So yeah, it's being annoying. So you have to use
it. It's basically sink or swim. You either learn or you don't.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I respect that. That's how it was back then. But, I can get behind.
But yeah, if you want to check it out, I would highly recommend checking it out. And I think the thing that I also find kind of weird is like this game has Japanese voices too, but you cannot find out who the Japanese cast is. You have to like dig through like old trailers to look like who is the voice actor for this person, right?
That's weird. So they don't credit them even in the credits?
It only has like the American voice actor listed. But it has the whole Japanese cast too.
Is it one a weird like version thing where like if you get the Japanese release, it'll actually show them in the credits?
Probably. That might be it. Yeah, and I'm guessing if you play it on PC, like sometimes some games, if you want to change the text language, you have to set it in the Steam app settings and not in game. Because I know that like a bunch of like Koei Tecmo Gus games have that stipulation, which is weird. And I believe that's how Saga Scarlet Grace, you were able to get the Japanese voices on PCs. You downloaded the Japanese version, grabbed the voice files, then switched to the English version, just replaced the English voices with the Japanese voice files.
Yeah. I mean, the dub is great in both languages. I basically checked a video about like the dub, because I was playing in Japanese. Like, the dub is good too. It even has Pro CD in this.
Oh, cool. Nice.
So, yeah. I would highly recommend checking it out if you're willing to stomach the price tag.
Or, you know, you can just wait for a Steam sales off. Like, if you're, I don't think there's a demo or anything.
I think there is a demo.
Is there a demo?
Yeah, you could probably just play like a short bit of it.
If there's a demo, even better. But even then, you know, it'll eventually go on sale as well. If it's too much for the playtime that you're saying, that's cool.
All right, that's Slave Zero X. Thank you, Chow. I'm glad you finally got to talk about it after a busy...
Yeah, it's not a long thing to talk about because yeah. No, it's not very expansive.
Yeah, I know, but it's just a busy RPG offerings lately. James, you've been going down the VR rabbit hole after, not enjoying Soul Covenant, unfortunately. You talked about you enjoyed parts of Soul Covenant, but...
Yeah.
But, you expressed your grievances with it and wrote a review on the site. And, there are definitely some things here and there that are good aspects about it, but overall just didn't seem like a great, package, especially, we had the expectations like, hey, this is from the Soul Sacrifice alumni.
And I'll talk about that a bit later, but long story short, it's like, the thing, it's always the worst when you review a game that's middling, but you can see how it could have been an 8 or a 9.
Right. Right.
And that's the experience I had with Soul Covenant. But again, I'll talk about that later. Let me talk about a VR game that you should play if you have a MetaQuest or any Oculus headset on PC, or if you're waiting for it to release on Steam, because it's not on Steam yet, even though the PC VR version is out.
Okay.
Reason for that is that they decided to make a non-VR version that going by their...
what's the name of this game you're talking about?
Sushi Ben. So it's a point-and-click kind of narrative adventure game that was written by the How to Fool Boyfriend writer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's like, that's, I think, the selling point. But basically, you decide to move to a random, small, Japanese fishing town. And, it's just an narrative adventure game where you're helping this one dude who's basically this apprentice at this very well-known sushi restaurant. But his boss has basically gone out on an expedition to better hone his craft. And meanwhile, a bunch of land sharks are trying to buy up the entire town so they can make a resort.
It's not exactly Dave the Diver, but when I heard that this year, I thought of Dave the Diver first.
Yeah. So basically, the gameplay loop is you make friends with people in the town to try and convince them to go to the sushi restaurant so that Ben, the apprentice, basically can better hone his craft and also make sure that enough people are coming into the sushi restaurant that he doesn't have to sell the deed. because even though he is an apprentice, he owns the deed to the restaurant because his boss was his father's best friend and started the sushi restaurant with him.
Oh my God, that's an elaborate premise for... what are you doing in this game? You're just making sushi, right?
Yeah, so you just go around, you can fish, you can catch bugs, you can help clean up ghosts. There's all sorts of little things. It's about 7 to 8 hours long.
Okay.
It looks like there's going to be more added with the Steam release and also the PSVR 2 release. Because even though the game released and it didn't say it was early access when it came out last October, right now you get kind of like credits kind of come out of nowhere. There's a cliffhanger and then there's a to be continued. And the developers have already said, yeah, there's going to be more stuff with the Steam and PSVR releases. I'd say that I'm not really miffed about that because, again, 7 to 8 hours. And it was I think I got it for under $15 on the April sale for the Quest, which, by the way, it's not advertised, but there is a PC VR release through the Meta Link app. So if you have an Oculus Rift or anything, you can play it there. And also, it's not advertised that it's cross-buy. It doesn't automatically add it to your library. So it's like I bought the Quest version, played an hour and a half of it there. Then I realized, wait a second, it's saying I can just grab the PC VR version for free now. And then I was like, okay, fuck it. I'll just play through the whole game that way. Because the Quest version's fine, but it's definitely... if you have a PC that can handle streaming to the Quest headset, it's going to be a better experience just because it's going to look a lot better with resolution and refresh rate and whatnot.
Yeah,
because
that's your PC hardware.
Yeah.
Built-in hardware. Got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, it's very charming, very cute, great time, and it's good because it makes use of VR in a lot of great ways, and it's like constantly like changing things up a bit. Like one of the things that's neat. Now let me find the Steam page because there is a Steam page that showcases it. The game has a like kind of like manga aesthetic, and the way that a lot of cutscenes work is that they actually. Okay, here's the best example I can think of. Do you remember Gravity Rush's cutscenes?
Yeah.
With the comics and whatnot, mm-hmm. and how if you moved the Vita, you would have like a slightly different like view of the comic page. So imagine that, but it's like dialogue boxes, and then you'll just see sometimes these manga panels like showcasing something as you're talking to someone off to the side. Sometimes they can be animated, and it's like it's a really neat look. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. So I guess not too much else to say.
The structure of this game, is it just like a series of like mini game activities? Are you going to point, or is it like you're actually traveling out and like going to the places that you need to go to?
So you are doing a lot of mini games, but there's no fast travel. You actually have to walk around the town to get to where you need to go. And there's like various like tunnels that go to different sections. Like there's a rice farm. There's a sake bar. There's a bunch of other places. And so you just have to walk around. You do have different VR motion options. You can just walk. You can move the camera with a snap or smooth turning. There's a teleport. Locomotion, which even though I can handle just walking around, I use teleport a lot just because it's quicker to get around. Because the way it works is that you can kind of like aim it in an arc, so you can kind of if you're at the bottom of a cliff and you don't want to get to where the stairs are, you can kind of just aim it right up, and if you angle it correctly, you can just teleport to the top without having to walk around. So that's fun.
So I went to the Steam page for this that you linked, and it actually says, hey, a non-VR mode will be available for this game upon launch, so people can enjoy the game using a keyboard and mouse or a controller.
I understand why they're doing that, and it's probably the right decision, but if you actually go to Big Brain Studios, which is their names, Twitter page, you can see the in-progress non-VR version. And the way they've also said it in replies is it's not so much, oh, by default, it's going to be non-VR. It's like you have to have a launch option on Steam. And looking at the clips they've shown of the non-VR version, it's
this is best enjoyed because this is built for...
best enjoyed with VR. Yeah, let me see if I can find like a clip of what I'm talking about. But wait, one of the things they've done with the non-VR version is instead of it being like built from the ground up, like rebuilt from the ground up, so it works with non-VR. The problem is that instead it's like okay. So for example, in VR you have your two hands and they're tracked and whatnot. Those two hands, they're constantly just floating in the middle of the screen on the non-VR version. Just constantly floating in the middle of the screen. You have to actually, and in order to do activities, you still need to use them. So there's like a key command to like take control of one of the arms and basically use the map. And it's like, I'm looking at that and it's like, that can't be a good experience. If you're going to play this, like I understand why they're making it non-VR because especially on PC, it's like people don't really buy VR games that much. But if you're going to play this, Make sure you have a headset. Like a Quest 2 is like $200, less than $200 these days. It's not that bad, but yeah.
Okay, so maybe if you're thinking of checking this out, maybe consider getting a VR headset for this. Then, even though there will be non VR thing, it just doesn't seem like a great experience based on what they've been sharing about it. Maybe it is. Hopefully, it is, but yet to be seen.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. Sushi Ben, are there any other games that have caught your eye but you didn't start yet in VR?
Well, I did play through Moss Book 1 and started Moss Book 2, which are the two... I think those are some of the VR games most people have heard of. It's the cute little mouse game where you're like, it's a top-down, well, kind of isometric. It's a diorama look where you're playing as both the reader with your ability to influence the world, as well as the cute little mouse, Quill.
I believe like the first one of these was like a showcase at like at a Sony conference at E3.
Yes, when yes. Were... both Moss Book 1 and Book 2 were timed PlayStation VR 1 exclusives, but they're available on all VR platforms now. And so I've been playing through those. I played Moss Book 1. That took me like 5 hours, and I'm like 2.5 hours through Moss Book 2, which I believe is a bit longer. They're really great games. I got them on sale, went for in a bundle for like $15. Needless to say, if you have any VR headset of any kind, they are probably a good recommendation for two reasons. One, they're great games that do stuff that you can only do in VR. Two, they're very good to get you adjusted to VR without motion sickness, because they are strictly a seated VR experience. You're just moving your hands, or just moving your hands, maybe your head a bit.
Okay. So, that makes sense. Yeah, that's actually a good point to make on these. That's cool. And then you mentioned that you're going to check out the Resident Evil 4 eventually as well.
Yeah, the Quest VR version, not the remake VR version. That's right. Though I do believe that there are mods for the PC version to get it working with VR, because I've seen that there's the VR mod for Resident Evil 7 on PC. Looking at it, like, yes, the PSVR version is like true support, but looking at what they've managed to do with the PC VR mod now, I'm just gonna say it. If you want to play Resident Evil 7 in VR and you have a PC VR headset, don't even think about getting the PSVR 1 version. As someone that's played that game, ugly as hell on PS4 with the textures and PSVR. Just,
do you think that the optimal like VR setup at the moment is like if you have a capable PC, do PC VR streaming?
Quest 3. Because it's best supported, and it also means that if something doesn't come to PC VR, you also have access to the Oculus stuff. And it has a really good screen, and you can wirelessly stream it, which obviously there's going to be some compression that way, but in my experience, it's usually not noticeable, and especially if you're trying to play something like Sushi Ben, for example. Like, I compared it directly to the native version on the Quest, and it's like hands down 9-day difference. Stream it from PC, it looks a lot better, which obviously Sushi Ben is going to be an extreme example, because looking at the art style, it's very simple, it's very like colorful, so the compression probably has an easier time with it, but it still stands to reason that that's probably going to be your best experience.
So with the Meta Quest VR headsets, I don't know if I'm working off of outdated info or not, because I haven't really looked at this space too much. But is it still mandatory to like make a Meta account to like use these headsets?
Yes, but your Meta account can be separate from your Facebook account, so you can make an account dedicated just to the Meta stuff and not connect it to your Facebook or Instagram.
Okay, so you can keep it totally separate.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. So that is Sushi Ben. Thank you for letting us know about that. I didn't know that was that existed until you mentioned it. And that'll be coming. That's already out on the Quest, and then coming to Steam soon.
Yeah, and again, it is available on PC if you have a Quest headset. Which going by Steam VR like a hardware like the most recent hardware survey. Something like 60%+ of people on Steam with a VR headset have a Quest 2 or 3 anyways, so it doesn't really... Realistically, if you're playing VR on PC, you probably have access to a headset that will let you play this game on PC already. If not, I'm sorry, but statistically, most people do.
How is the Steam... the Index, I believe, how is that faring up these days?
It is the second most popular, but next month the Quest 3 will overtake it, because it's less than a percentage point away.
Wow, okay. So adoption rates for the Quest 3 are very high.
Yes, but to be fair, I feel like if you're talking about PC VR like adoption, it's going to be a bit more extreme, because of like, even if people on PC VR aren't really like buying games as much, it feels like it, since it's an enthusiast segment, people are more likely to have upgraded it versus people that are still like only playing stuff like on the headset itself.
Do you think, I remember reading this a few months back, I don't know what the status on it is, but of Sony officially allowing PC support on PSVR 2?
They haven't said, I think that'll be a relatively popular headset on Steam VR, because there are a few things about that headset that makes me interested in picking one up now that I've had some experience with the Quest 3. Two things specifically. It's an OLED panel, so the blacks are going to look a lot better. It also has HDR support, so you can play VR games in HDR with auto HDR if you want to, or like NVIDIA's option, because I doubt most VR games have HDR support built in. But also, it has eye tracking, which means that one of the things that Steam can do is if a headset supports eye tracking, it will have foveated rendering, which means that it'll only render in full resolution what your eyes are directly looking at.
That's pretty cool.
And I don't think that'll be much of a benefit to me since I'm using a fucking 4090, but for anyone else that wants to try PC VR, that's immediately going to make it a lot easier because the actual number of pixels being rendered are going to be much lower. But because of the eye tracking, you're not going to really notice because it's only going to be in your periphery vision, which you're not going to notice it as much anyways. And by the time your eyes start over there, it's going to be a higher resolution to begin with.
An interesting thought experiment is like, I wonder how that would look from like a streaming from an outsider's perspective of like things are like blurred on the screen, but like you see their eyes like adding more detail on like the things that they're actually looking at. I wonder if that's like even possible to like stream like the video out.
Like every VR headset lets you do that. And the way that it works is that if you run something on Steam VR, for example, you're still, if you look at your main monitor or someone else looks at your main monitor, you're going to see the game running. Okay. You're going to see the game on the monitor. So, it's like two main issues with the PSVR 2 is that it has Fresnel lenses, which that doesn't mean anything if you don't know VR. But basically, the two main types of lenses there are Fresnel, which are the ones that have been in most VR headsets. Those really require you to dial in your IPD, which is your distance between your eyes, and get the sweet spot just right so that the games look right. The Quest 3 has pancake lenses, which it's less of a concern. The way that those panels work is that it's very easy to get a good image. You don't have to worry too much about your IPD. You don't have to worry too much about having it a perfect exact fit on your head. It'll just work. Also, the PSVR 2 has wire. Quest 3 and 2, for that matter, you can stream wirelessly to the headset from your PC. And if you have a dedicated router, which is what I've done, because I had a spare Wi-Fi 6 router sitting around, it's a really good experience. You get very minimal latency, very minimal compression. And so for VR streaming, that's a big deal. You don't have to worry about the wire. But for PSVR 2, especially for seated stuff, that's going to be a really, really good option for PC players in the future.
Okay. Yeah, it's been kind of, I've been kind of keeping an eye on VR stuff, but it's just like, it just feels like, for me, from an outside perspective, I was like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like it's there yet in terms of like convenience.
Yeah, but I'd say that with the Quest 3, it's a bit more expensive, but it is close enough. It is close enough where I'd be able to recommend it to most people, and I especially feel like whatever they do for the Quest 4, if they can get eye tracking and a better non-LCD panel in the Quest 4, in addition to whatever like performance improvements and keyword encoding improvements, if they can get the AV1 bitrate up higher a bit, that'll even make it even better, even though it's already a pretty good experience for wireless streaming. Quest 3, really good. I'm really interested to see what the next headset is, because it really is at that point where it's like it's on the cusp where like I can recommend it, but I feel like the next one is going to easily be the one where it's like, okay, it's mainstream enough, you can recommend it to basically anyone.
All right, thank you for telling us about Sushi Ben and the current state of VR. That is, you know, it is one of those things that's like, if you're not paying attention to it, it's like easy to forget all the advancements to it.
It's crazy because like one thing I pointed out is that like we have like relatively recent numbers for both MetaQuest like headset sales and my like Xbox sales. Like last year, we got like details where like there had been like 21 million Quest. Not 21 million Xbox consoles sold. And at around the same time, like maybe a few months earlier, we got confirmation that there had been 20 million Quest headsets sold.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't think it was that high.
Yeah, and as we know, like, Xbox hardware sales have dipped quite hard, like, quite a bit over the last year, whereas Quest headset sales have been pretty steady or have even been growing. So there's a pretty real chance that as of right now, there are more people with Quest 2 and 3 headsets than there are with an Xbox Series X or S.
I wonder what's the mainstream like appeal of like how, of its like that, like what are the games that like are people gravitating towards with these
VR headsets? Chat, Beat Saber.
Okay.
VR Chat, Beat Saber. For the Quest headset specifically, I know there's stuff like there's free to play stuff like Gorilla Tag, which is an interesting thing. The problem I think VR has is that a lot of people, like myself included, until a few weeks ago, you don't realize how much support these headsets are getting, because a lot of people still think that's nothing but tech demos, but that's not the case. Like just last year, like one of the best reviewed RPGs of last year that nobody on the site played was Asgard's Wrath 2, which is a first party meta exclusive that's like a 60-hour long action RPG. And there's games like that coming, like Sushi Ben. Like, yeah, it was only 7 to 8 hours, but it's a full game. It's not just the tech demo. It's like an actual like point-and-click adventure, and there's obviously more coming. But still, it's like already in a decent enough state where it's like, yeah, that's a full game. It doesn't feel like it's just a tech demo.
Yeah.
Then there's all sorts of other stuff. And like, obviously, ports of games that weren't originally VR, but are VR now, like Resident Evil 4. And like, despite my issues with it, Soul Covenant. It's like, there's tons of games coming out, and it's like, I think the main problem VR has now is that a lot of people just assume a lot of things about it. Like, oh, you still need a powerful PC to play it. When it's like, I'm telling you right now, you literally every game on VR worth playing, or like 99% of them worth playing, is going to come to Quest 3 in the next like 2 or 3 years.
I think it's also a big factor of it is like price as well. Like people think that like it's a high pay gate to get up and running on it, like, because when you look at like the most marketed one, like PSVR2, they see like the huge price tag. It's like, I need a PlayStation 5 and this to even like begin like playing games. Like it's a high financial ask.
Yeah, you can get a Quest 3 for $500, which is the same as a PS5 or a Series X, and it is a next gen console platform. It's just a different type of platform than people are used to. And there's also rumors that there's going to be a Quest 3S or 3 Lite, which will use the same panels that the Quest 2 did, and some other things are a bit cheaper, but it'll have the same pass-through and the same like actual performance, and that's rumored to be $300, and there's some pretty credible like things pointing to it, and a lot of people are assuming the reason why the Quest 2 is like on fire sale right now is because they want to get people on Quest 3 because they want to really focus on that mixed reality stuff with the pass-through and whatnot.
Yeah. I wonder, an interesting thought popped into my head of like, I wonder if moving forward, since Xbox and maybe even PlayStation exclusives are more and more coming to just PC in general, of like, maybe the path forward, if you want to like experience like the most amount of like games that, you know, that each platform has to offer, it's like, maybe it's like PC, then Nintendo, then VR, ? Who knows?
I think that's what I'm going to do heading forward, like, especially if Falcom finally starts releasing stuff on PC day and date, which the last we've heard, they wanted to do that with East 10. So there is a chance in the next few years that will happen. I am not just coping, I swear to God.
I hope so. I really hope that Falcom does do. Let's see. Okay, thank you, James, for that. Our final game is just me just finishing up Megaton Musashi W's single player campaign and getting really deep into the end game stuff. I have a review I'm writing up. I'm finalizing it. Just telling you right now here, the final score for it will be a 9. I had a really, really, really great time with this game. I didn't know what to expect going in, and I came out on the other end over 50 hours, and I'm just like, wow, this is a surprisingly excellent game and a very strong showing for level 5 in terms of like kind of the first full product they've released in the West after after several years. I was super blown away, and the end game stuff has a lot of like very challenging
quest that, like, I feel it's kind of a little overtuned, to be honest. I wonder if they'll make some balance changes in there, in here, but still, it is still a great time just co-oping with other players, even though it's like a relatively small player base, unfortunately, but I still do find rooms here and there to join and co-op those tougher fights at. It does remind me a lot about, like, it gives me Phantasy Star Online energy in this aspect of the game. So it's just been a lot of fun, and I'll go more into it with my review. I'm just right now just saying, hey, it's a big 2 thumbs up. If you like action RPGs, definitely give it a shot. If you want just a lot of features, a lot of action RPG gameplay loop. And even then, like, the story, like, I do have my grievances with the story here and there, especially with the new like main story content that they did with Wired that I'll get into with my review without spoiling it. But I think it's just, like, the pacing is, like, just at an alarmingly bad, like, rushed pace in this new main story thing. Like, despite fumbling the landing on that, I still have a lot of, like, strong, like, good feelings about, like, how the overall story went there. And it's kind of weird. I think they might add more main story, I'm not sure, to this game with later content updates, because after the end credits, it gives a to be continued screen. And it's like, well, are you going to continue the story? I don't know. They're heavily implying, I don't know if that'll be through updates to this game or through a sequel. I'm not sure. But I think it'll be through content up. Either way, I hope they don't do what they did with that additional story with Wired. Even that, I haven't really touched this portion of the game because of, like, the low player base. I kind of dabbled a little bit with it, but there's even a whole full, like, separate PvP progression in this game with, like, you can, like, customize, like, a totally separate robot and, like, totally separate skill tree just for the PvP part of this game. And it's very robust, but at the same time, the main Achilles heel in that portion of the game is low player base. In that, so queuing it with other players can be sometimes a lengthy process, which is, it's no fault of the game of its own. It's just, like, it's just, you know, not a lot of people know that this game exists and it has, like, this functionality too. And it has a lot working against it, which is, you know, I try to. It's one of these types of reviews that's, like, it's difficult to, like, kind of encapsulate the challenges that it faced up until this point and that it continues to face now, too.
Is that, like, kind of like those problems where, like, people get early access to, like, review games and try to do the multiplayer, but you have to find, like, other reviewers who want to do, like, the co-op?
Well, even then, it kind of has that, but even then, like, with this 4 release, there's just not a lot of people playing, like, even if, like, a lot of people were playing, let's say, this game, you need to have, like, a subsection of that group that, like, is like-minded in, like, giving the PvP a shot and, like, and committing to that PvP. Like, the PvP in itself is a fine time, but it's just like, hey, you have, like, this big-ass story that you want to go through because it unlocks more functions even in that PvP portion of the game. Alongside of, like, there is also other modes that isn't PvP focused. There's, like, a big PvE, like, end game loop, and, like, there's, like, a roguelite mode that also unlocks that, like, you want to dabble in because it focuses on, like, certain parts that are only obtainable in that mode as well. It's just, like, I think honestly it suffers from having too much stuff to do, so your player base, as small enough as it is even more dispersed by checking out other parts of the game, right? Like, some people want to push story, some people want to do the PvE end game, some people want to do this, some people want to do that, and then within that player base, it's like, okay, you have to find like-minded people who want to go through PvP, and then once you go further into PvP to the higher ranks, you'll have even less players to play with because it matches by rank, you know? So it's a multi-layered problem. it suffers from just being too full on features, which is a weird problem to say, but it is the reality. Hopefully over time through word of mouth, this game does find a stable player base. I would like it to. That'd be great. But I'll cover all of that in the review. And, you know, I've talked a lot about this game. I just have
just here to report, hey, there are, like, you know, this game overall, there are flaws about it, but I think thinking about the overall package and even not just internal features that it has, but external features of the crossplay and cross save. And I talked about like how people, even with the prior Japan exclusive releases, were able to bring their saves forward in an official capacity facilitated by Level 5 into the English releases onto other platforms. That's, you know, borderline unheard of. I think it just, they put their best foot forward with this game, and hopefully it does find some success and for them to be able to support this release in a more comprehensive capacity. That'd be great, but, you know, I know the reality of it, and hopefully I hope that Inazuma 11 doesn't stumble into this problem, because Inazuma 11 is looking like to be a really, really, really big game for them, and I know they want a really big player base for that game, and hopefully it doesn't suffer from the problems that Megaton Musashi did with this one, because ideally you'd want a very, very active player base on, you know, Inazuma 11, because it'll suffer into the same problems that Megaton Musashi does in terms of like having too much to do as well, because that Inazuma 11 game seems to have a very, very comprehensive single player experience and a lot of modes for that, and I know they want a very robust scene in the PvP space for that game as well, especially being a sports game too. So, well, quote unquote sports with all, you know, the crazy RPG aspects that it entails. So, yeah, maybe by the time this podcast releases, probably not, but the review will be up very soon, hopefully before the end of the weekend, and all sort of. It just depends on me just wrapping up my thoughts. It's a pretty big review. I cover a lot. And look forward to that. And hopefully, you know, if you're interested, give the review a read. Hopefully I'll be able to answer most questions about it. And if you do have lingering questions, you know, you can find me in 10 different other places through the Discord, through social media. And you can even ask on like the podcast comments, hey, I have a question about this. And I can always, you know, answer it on the podcast, etc. So yeah, that's kind of just my overall small final thoughts on Megaton Musashi. It's an incredible game, quite frankly. I hope more people give it a shot throughout the year. Before moving on to news, we talked about James with his experience with Soul Covenant. We do have a review for Broken Roads. Brian talked about Broken Roads briefly, but the review was written by Paige. Paige, being an Australian herself, didn't have a lot of nice things to say about Broken Roads, unfortunately. So that's it's she made quite a statement on it. So yeah, it's we also have a preview up written by Cullen on the upcoming re-release of Shin Megami Tensei 5 with Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance. He flew out and got to see what Atlas and Sega had to offer with it. So he got to play a little bit of the new Vengeance content. With this, saw like how they have at some points like human party members, saw a little bit of like the expanded areas now that you have like a room for the protagonist that you can chill out at, and he's a fan of that. Like, hey, even though it's like not going to be like probably not going to be a crazy big deal in the overall scope of things, just having a place to like kind of just like chill out, hang out, and you know, be, you know, kind of have breaks in moments of the action is you know, a nice thing to have in these intense in these types of RPGs. We also talked about, you know, a little bit about the new places you can socialize with your demons and so forth. So he had, you know, just very positive things to say about it, and coming out of it he was like, I just want to play more of this game. This game is very cool, and like he's seeing it that have this big second chance and being able to like run on more powerful hardware definitely helps. It's just like, it's just shaping up to be a really, really, really expensive like re-release for this game. That's like, you know, was already just a good game in its original release, and just having it have more of it is like just always good. Always good. So check out that preview for Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance. That is up on the site. Moving into news, the first big headline
we don't want to talk about my final thoughts for Soul Covenant.
I thought we did, but if you want to talk about
I briefly like pushed it aside because I was assuming we would talk about it. Yes, so it's like pretty much everything I said last week still remains the same with a few key distinctions. So my main problems were like the game's presentation, especially for the story scenes, was just mostly the projected slideshows, and how there was like what really grinded my gears about that was the fact that there was at least like one scene where it was in engine. There's a bunch more of those, but only in the last like third of the game's story. And they get a bit more creative with the projected slideshow stuff in the last third of the game's story. Which makes me angry because it's like, okay, so you knew that it wasn't really enough, so you got a bit more spicy with it at the very end of the game, and the combat gets a bit more interesting. You're still like fundamentally doing the same stuff, but the bosses themselves require you to dodge more, to block more. There's like more stuff, like they might summon these enemies that you have to deal with in the middle of the fight. It's like, so that's more engaging. And the final boss fight is genuinely really cool. Like the presentation of it as a unique arena. And then there's like the whole, like the ending is good. So when I said earlier where it's like, okay, you know, when you review a game and you could see how it could have been like a higher score, like an 8 or a 9. If the whole game was on the same level as the last third of this game, it would have at least been a 7 or an 8. There's still some things that could have improved, but it's so frustrating because it's like, even though I was ultimately a bit disappointed, I still got like sections, like little feelings from this game that did remind me of Soul Sacrifice. And it's like, okay, I'm not sure if it's because this had to run on the MetaQuest 2, so they were like restricted in what they could do. But I don't think that's really true. They could have done more. It's just frustrating because it's not a bad game, but it's one of those things where you can see, man, this should have been more. This should have been more.
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah. The multiplayer is completely broken for like 95% of people playing.
That sucks. Well, okay. That's not good. Hopefully they fix that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I didn't know you had more to say on it because you talked about a lot about it last week. So, okay. Yeah. Thank you for the
It wasn't much. I just wanted to give like some final thoughts and read my full review. Basically says the same things, but yeah, read my review, please.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah.
VR review?
I believe so, unless there's something else that we reviewed on VR that I don't.
It might be for a review. I know we definitely had previews, like when Scott traveled to PAX and checked out some VR RPGs there.
I know that Paul has been playing through Asgard's Wrath 2 for the last several months. ostensibly, he should be reviewing it. Hopefully he gets to it before I end up playing that game, because they're releasing an update for that like this month to increase the texture resolution on Quest 3. So I will finally be playing it like when that drops. I really, really hope he reviews it before I play through it myself.
I mean, no pressure. Let people enjoy games. You know,
it's been 5 months. He got a review copy for
it. Oh, he got a review copy. I didn't know that. So, you know, hopefully then he does. So.
Yeah.
All right. So that is Soul Covenant then. Moving on to the main headlines for the week. Once again, I said not a lot of announcements because it was Golden Week in Japan. It was a relatively low-key week in the West as well. But we did get a first glimpse into the Square Enix's financials this week. They have reported they have announced that they have recorded an extraordinary loss of 22.1 billion yen and quote-unquote content abandonment losses. And, you know, this is, frankly, to be expected because they did have a big, big restructure that they announced when Kiryu, you know, took over the president position for Square Enix. So they actually provided an official document from Square Enix Holdings, from the representing, you know, Square Enix's Takashi Kiryu as the president and representative director. As we stated, extraordinary loss of 22.1 billion yen because of the big restructuring that he coordinated throughout the company, and that led to a lot of talk behind the scenes of like a lot of canceled projects that were in development. So the projected revenue they may have made is reportedly 22.1 billion yen.
Yeah, so maybe a little more context on this. We are basically in April is basically called a quiet period. Like literally, that's what it's called, a quiet period. For fiscal reporting, because the fiscal years end for a lot of companies in March, like March 31st. And then the results come out usually late April, early May. So kind of that period in between there is the quiet period. But oftentimes within that quiet period, these companies will kind of like, they will have like sort of like a prelude to their results. They'll have like an adjustment or an announcement basically saying like, all right, to prepare you for the results that we're going to give that aren't, we haven't given yet, but that we're going to give, here's some information. For example, Koei Tecmo a couple weeks ago basically said, we have to lower our projections. And they actually did give their results recently also, but they basically came out and said, you know, we didn't hit the targets that we wanted, so we're going to lower our projections when we give our results in a couple of weeks. Capcom, on the other hand, before they haven't given the results yet, I think, but they actually raised their projections. They're basically saying, hey, we're doing better than expected. We're going to raise our expectations for this year. And this is basically Square Enix's version of that. They are basically saying, hey, we haven't given our fiscal year results yet, but we want to report an extraordinary loss. And I saw some people confused, like, why are they calling this extraordinary? This is like the literal definition of extraordinary in a finance term, or as a finance term, in that it is literally extraordinary. It's not something they would normally see in a typical year. So it's literally not ordinary. And that is that they canceled a bunch of projects. And because they canceled projects, those are costs that cannot be recouped in any way. So they basically have to call it a loss. So it's an extraordinary loss. Now, we don't know what these projects are, but I saw some people wondering, like, it seemed genuinely like, I hope Kingdom Hearts 4 is okay. It's like, yeah, Kingdom Hearts 4 is going to be fine. It's going to be made.
If they've announced it before,
that's we're talking probably, the type of games that were probably canceled. Now, these are not real games, but the types of games that were probably canceled are going to be smaller scale stuff like Dio Field 2 or Valkyrie Elysium 2 or something like that. Or, you know, smaller
One game that definitely is not happening is Harvestella 2, because that director left the company.
So yeah, there are probably a handful of smaller projects that were canceled. All the big stuff is going to be fine. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth 2 or Remake 3 or whatever is going to happen. That wouldn't have been this fiscal year anyway. But so they've been saying this for the last couple of, you know, reports, is that they're trying to be more choosy, pick and choose, like, okay, what projects we're going to make. And we're going to focus our kind of consolidate our resources to focus on a smaller number of things versus, you know,
they're trying to refocus more like into like a more Capcom structure, I guess it would be an easier way for people to like visualize, because Capcom backs their weight behind very, you know, only a handful of like IP, like Resident Evil or Street Fighter. You know, they'll have like new stuff here and there, like with Exo Primal and Kenitsugami, but it's not like as prolific as how Square Enix has been doing it for the past few years.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think people realize just how much Square Enix has released in the last 5 years. A lot of people, when they think Square Enix, are like, oh, Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts, and Nier, or whatever. But there's so many other small things that probably didn't even remember.
September 2022 to January 2023, they were releasing, like, on average, a game every 2 weeks.
Yeah,
there was just too much to keep up in general.
But I think like smaller, even smaller series like Star Ocean, for example, like you have to wonder, okay, what is the current, like, is a new Star Ocean happening anytime soon?
Oh, I'm sure that's fine, because Star Ocean 2 Remake was critically and commercially successful.
Hopefully. I'm not saying that's a success.
I'm just assuming that since, I'm assuming Kiryu, like most businessmen, looks at recent results and informs things based off of that. And if I was him and I was thinking, okay, what IPs do we want to kind of boost, which we've seen happening with Mana, with Visions of Mana releasing in the next couple of months. You look at, okay, so Star Ocean 6 was received middling, but it was received better than most of those titles we released during that like onslaught of games. And Star Ocean 2 Remake was beloved by literally everyone that played it. There is potential for Star Ocean. It gets to live. That would be my assumption.
Yeah, but hopefully, like I said, nothing is set in stone. We don't know. But hopefully that is the case, right? But of course, anything that has been announced before, like Adam said, like Kingdom Hearts 4, do not worry. That is probably 99.9% not canceled.
You know? Oh, 100% not canceled. That is, yeah.
Now, the stuff that's maybe more questionable is like the rumored stuff like of a Final Fantasy IX remake. Is like, is that still a thing? I sometimes hear things just like, that was internally delayed or whatever. I have no idea if this is true or not.
Yeah,
but like...
yeah. Like, Adam and I both seemingly have the same core, like, source for some of the stuff that we hear. And it, from what we understand, that was originally going to be an Epic Games Store exclusive, which puts in perspective how long ago it was supposed to release.
But my point is that this stuff, like, that was originally in the NVIDIA leak, in which everything else basically came to fruition. So it's very likely that it was or is a real project, but the state of it is really hard to say at this point. Who knows?
And to put in perspective, that NVIDIA leak was 2019. That was 5 years ago. So if it's still not out yet, like, you don't need to have any sort of, like, source to know that that game was in development hell of some sort.
Mm-hmm. There was like supposed to be a cartoon, and that never happened.
Or that festival that they were supposed to show a trailer for that.
I know Final Fantasy IX is beloved, but I don't think it'll be that enough to get like all this attention to it. At least that's been my opinion.
I think that if the remake still lives, it's probably because Kiryu's whole thing is he wants there to be less games but higher quality. And especially with Final Fantasy, I feel like it behooves them to kind of build that brand up a bit more, because in recent years, even though I love Rebirth, even though I think that 16 was generally a good game, it's undeniable that it's like when arguably Persona is the bigger RPG franchise in the current day than Final Fantasy, Square Enix leadership probably isn't happy about that.
They've done a lot of mistakes around the 13-ish era. It's like you get a very shitty MMO that came out, like original 14, not talking about A Realm Was Reborn. And yeah, 13 with all the sequels that keep selling less, and people are wondering, why are they selling less? It's like, maybe this series is not that popular. And you're like, Yeah, the brand's been kind of tarnished over the years, so I'm not sure if doing what they're doing is going to recover it. But I'm all in for this model, you know? It's like, focus on better quality games instead of releasing quantity, right? So.
Yeah,
Adam. So historically, when can we expect like around the time period of when more detailed Square Enix financials?
Let me check the IR calendar. The thing is some companies will literally tell you like, we are releasing our results on this day. Square Enix is not one of those companies. They're just like, we will release results sometime.
I don't know if there's like a trend of like they usually like hit.
Well,
like, you know,
I'm going to see when they released it like last year, for instance. So last year's full year fiscal results came in May 12th, 2023. So maybe this week, maybe next week.
So. I also have like another question. Is like, has the yen crashed so hard that it also affected like their entire market structure as well? Or
that is something they do. I forget what they call that, like profit or loss attributable to parent, where it's like not considered an ordinary income or loss, but it's like still counts. The yen conversion does count or does matter.
That definitely factors in this as well. So, but it's definitely one of those things that they have to almost segregated in their financial report as like, this is like a market thing that we cannot control.
And even like Koei Tecmo, even in their report, they basically say for like Koei Tecmo released their basically plan for next year. And they even have, I don't remember it off the top of my head, but they had like a stipulation, like this is assuming that the yen trans to USD rate is going to be this or whatever, because they don't know what it's going to be right. in 6 months yeah. or whatever. So
yeah, it's tough. It's definitely tough because while American tourism greatly benefits from the weaker yen, it is a catastrophe right now, obviously for the Japanese market with having the weaker yen.
It's the cheapest time for me to whale on video games. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So yeah, so we'll get more financials, more detailed financials sometime within this.
By the way, I don't think we have this on our list, but while I brought it up, Koei yeah. Tecmo's financials were basically this. Apparently, according to them, they don't give details, but Rise of the Ronin is selling faster than Neo series initial sales. Now, there's a lot of like vagueness there, like selling initial yeah. sales are better. Like, how so? Like in the first week on PlayStation.
To contextualize it, like the two Neo games did start out as like PlayStation exclusives as well.
Right. They yeah. really so a similar one. Release like format. So in some metric, they are selling better. We don't know what that metric is. They just say it's selling better than Neo. However, they do say in the report that they did that. Actually, a lot of their stuff overall did not hit their targets, their console game sales or their mobile game like revenue. So that's actually why I said earlier they lowered their projections. They're still doing better than last year, but they didn't quite hit their goals. So it's sort of like medium good. Like we're up year over year, but not as much as we thought we would be. And actually, one of their biggest successes this last year were mobile games. And they brought up two. The Atelier one is a success for them, especially in Japan. As well as, what was it?
Nobunaga's Ambition, I believe.
Oh, yeah, Nobunaga's Ambition mobile game. I don't know what this mobile game is, but that one was also doing well. Those are the two they brought up. So overall, seems like Koei Tecmo is doing okay. Maybe not as well as they were hoping for. And they actually did mention that their sales overseas, like that's literally in the US and the West and in Asia, weren't as high as they wanted. And they didn't reach their targets. And by targets, they have like this goal. They want like a 5 million seller every other year or every year or something like that. So it didn't seem like they got that.
It's a big goal.
Yeah, it's like they aimed high, they didn't quite get it, but they're not like losing money. So they're doing okay.
One of the more interesting developments that came out of that fiscal report is that I believe they're establishing a new studio dedicated to making AAA games, right?
Well, it's actually sort of funny is they don't actually say that, I think. They call it the AAA studio to make console games. You would assume by its name, by definition, they'd be for AAA games. Okay, but anyway.
But it's internally called AAA studio.
Yeah, you're making a pretty small leap. Like, it's probably so, fair yeah. to assume. But yeah, so they have this image in their financial report about all their studios like Omega Force and Team Ninja and Gust and Midas, which is one of their mobile game like studios and whatnot. And then like we're adding a new studio, which is literally just called AAA Studio. I don't know if that's like a temporary name, but it's literally called AAA Studio to make console games. Okay. And also throughout this report, they do talk about how they're hoping to kind of break more into that quote AAA space, and Rise of the Ronin was kind of like a first go at it. I guess in terms of scope, in terms of budget, in terms of market penetration. So they're it seems like they kind of believe they're not there yet, but they're trying to get there with like a big game. Now the thing is this report, while the report is in English, like they release it in Japanese and English, they don't actually have like comments from the CEO or the boss or the president or whoever of the actual like meeting yet. That should come soon, probably this week. So maybe we'll get more insight.
Yeah, I do want to also mention that like you did provide like internally to us like a pastebin like analysis of this, and they do like acknowledge like, hey, we, like a lot of our higher ups here are starting to get really old, and we are trying to foster like the next generation of like developers here. So they do acknowledge, hey, we do have an aging staff, and we do want to you know, pave a path for the future for with our younger staff members. They also mentioned that two major titles that released in 2022 failed to meet their targets, and presumably this would encompass like Wild Hearts and Wolong. So yeah. those didn't seem to meet their targets, and they're very, I guess, self-aware with like their shortcomings. Like even with stuff like Rise of the Ronin, which I reviewed, like they even acknowledge like, hey, we do want to they believe that they have a strong performance rip, but they do acknowledge like there are problems with it, like the open world being, you know, very antiquated, outdated. So, and moving forward, they want to, you know, obviously make better quality games, have better processes and management structures to making these AAA titles, and so forth, and aggressively train new graduates for game development as well. So they want to, they definitely want to improve their internal process and like and releasing better quality games moving forward. So I think it's just like it's kind of like this weird sort of like almost like level of transparency that you don't really see in these kinds of reports.
Yeah. So. I think the last thing to mention that's relevant to us in this report is they don't give like hard sales numbers for Rise of the Ronin or some other games, but they do give hard sales numbers for Fate Samurai Remnant. It is at 410,000. So almost half a million.
Yeah.
And I think we reported that it was at 300,000 in the week of launch. So, I mean, most games are pretty top heavy in terms of sales, but so it's not quite at half a million yet. They don't really say outright that it's, you know, if that's a success or what their expectations were. I assume it's a success. I don't know like by what extent, but we at least have a hard number. And then also the Atelier Marie remake was 120,000. Which
I didn't know. That doesn't seem like a lot.
I know. Yeah, it is like a lower budget, you know, kind of this chibi remake. Maybe that's exactly what they're aiming for. Just something smaller scale. It's hard to say, but we get a number.
Yeah. So that is the state of the business over at Koei Tecmo. And we'll see how a lot of these developments right now are not going to be apparent within at least 5 years. So we'll see. We'll see what their plans are for that AAA studio.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Next up, Starfield is getting a big update. They are adding surface maps. There are gameplay settings, ships customization, Xbox display options, quality of life, and more in there. What they're calling the largest update since launch, and that'll be hitting on May 15th. What are some of the big highlights that you saw with this one, Adam?
The one that wasn't really highlighted, but I saw people like kind of latch on to, is that they're adjusting or at least offering an option for the dialogue camera.
What do you mean by the dialogue camera?
I guess so. I think James is the only one who's played Starfield here. So normally the dialogue camera, you talk to the person like face to face, right?
Uh-huh.
Literally they're you know, they're right in the middle of the screen.
It's like the typical Bethesda.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess you can now adjust that to some extent where it's more like off angle or whatever, and some people like that. There's adjustments to the Xbox version in terms of performance, in terms of like they're now offering different frame rate options and a performance mode and a graphics mode or quality mode, or I forget what they call it.
Exactly. I thought that was there already with I guess that wasn't. Huh. I thought they already did offer that.
I wouldn't know. They're at least offering new options. They're updating like the maps. They call them the surface maps in terms of like more details about what can be seen on the maps in terms of locations of vendors and fast travel points and scanning points and whatnot. There's also some like quality of life, kind of like actual gameplay options that literally will change like the difficulty of the game. For example, how much you can like, or I guess how far you can transfer stuff in and out of your cargo. Even if you're like far away, you can just access your cargo whenever. There's like a setting you can set for that.
That's even nice.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, if you're full up on stuff, no matter where you are, you just dump it off in your cargo, even if your ship is on the other side of the planet. And like your carry capacity and things like that, your sustenance, I'm looking through the menu here, how much you get healed from items, how much sustenance you get from food. So there's like literally like difficulty toggles or resource toggles of some sort that are being added. Now, I don't know if all of those are new, but that's at least what they were showing in the menu. There's new like aesthetic stuff for your ships that you can do in terms of designing the interiors of your ship and customizing those. There's new game plus stuff. There are new tabs in your container and barter menus, making it easier to see when you're navigating to quickly cycle through menus. Okay. Seems good. Yeah.
Hey, I mean, when we finally get around to it, Adam, well, this will be waiting for us.
It'll be better than it was at launch, which I guess is true for practically every game now. But especially
new game plus trick respecking. Yeah, the another one they're showing here is like new game plus trick respecking. More options for new game plus. So, that's great. They're talking about a little bit about the future of Starfield. There's still some major features on the horizon, including a land vehicle, for speedier planetary exploration. And I believe they like showed off like a little teaser of that in a development video. For this, so you know, it's basically telling us, hey, the more we wait, the better it'll get.
So it'll be like No Man's Sky all over again. Just wait a couple years, and the game will be 10 times better.
There you go.
So in about 10 to 15 years, they're going to do like a Starfield show, and then the show will be good, and people will go back and play Starfield.
There you go.
It's like Fallout. And then when you send a complaint, and they'll still talk about Fallout 76, even though you're talking about a different game.
Yeah, I know what you're referring to.
Next up here, we have a 2.5D adventure RPG, Beyond Galaxy Land, that's been announced for PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. This is from developer Sam Enright and publisher United Label. What is this Beyond Galaxy Land?
So we had a handful of like indie announcements and updates and trailers and release dates this week. A lot of that was because Xbox, like literally, there was like literally the IGN cross Xbox ID event. I might have got some of those terms mixed up. ID at Xbox event, with like IGN like contributing. Had a bunch of stuff in there. Now, I'm not actually sure if this game was in that event or not, or just sort of coincided alongside it. But this is an indie game. It's like a turn-based pixel art adventure-ish turn-based RPG. It kind of looks like that Star Renegades game that I reviewed a couple of years ago. Sort of like that, I don't know, it's like a retro-ish high fidelity, I know it's kind of a oxymoron, type of pixel art. With like the sort of similar color palette and similar style. You're going to like different worlds and different biomes with weird creatures and whatnot. I don't know a whole lot else about the game other than like the quick trailer they had. But yeah, just an indie game that was announced that looks kind of neat. So coming out year at some point.
Yeah. And then Sam Enright says, hey, you know, I was inspired by turn-based RPGs mid to late 90s, and then mentioned Chrono Trigger and FF7. As some of the inspirations behind this project as well. It does look really nice. And like you said, it does remind you of that the pixel richness that Star Renegades had. So this actually looks pretty damn cool. I see turn-based battle screenshot, and your party members, one of them is like a mole-like creature called Boom Boom, and then a robot called Robort, all in caps.
There's some like kind of fun, weird designs in this game. Like I just clicked around in the trailer and here's like a humanoid pig wearing like those really big like sunglasses wearing a hoodie. Like, okay.
But yeah, when I look at like the screenshot, like the turn-based system, it does really remind me of Star Renegades in its presentation. Mm-hmm. Not to say that it is, but it does remind me a lot about that. You see ability points, you have turn points. There's even, they even show there's like a summons option in the turn-based screenshot. So this is coming out later in 2024. for basically everything. This might be one to look out for. This looks really cool. I dig it.
Damn, we both posted the same screenshot. Yeah,
we shared our screenshot in our chat. Like, this one is what we're talking about. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Child, the screenshot, he says the enemy looks like Ruby Weapon. We have an update to SteamWorld Heist 2. I'm personally excited about this one. They gave a deep dive on the gameplay, primarily on the class system in this game, saying, hey, the weapons you pick up will define your class, and showing some of the skill trees and some of the specializations they can do for each class, like the Boomer class, obviously specializes like explosive weapons. The Engineer class can...
the Boomer class that specialize in yelling at the youth.
If only. I know. I'm sure they're very self-aware with that, but they called David Boomer. The engineers can create like cover for your other players. You have Reapers, Flankers, all sorts of stuff. So
I'm not really familiar with SteamWorld. So is SteamWorld dig the platforming game and Heist is like the RPG is how it goes, or is it?
Yeah, SteamWorld is like a kind of like a brand name, but like the series themselves, like SteamWorld Dig is that 2D side scroller platformer. The SteamWorld Heist ones is like this 2D sort of like XCOM-esque turn-based RPG style combat. But like SteamWorld Quest, for example, is also RPG, but that is more sort of like deck building to
I think Quest is actually leans a little bit more RPG than Heist does, but Heist does have like the classes and like your different stats and weapon loadouts and things like that, so it's RPG enough. But it's kind of got a little bit of like a almost puzzle element to it, because you have to like go around these like 2D rooms and knock out enemies in a certain order and properly.
And then there's a lot of bullet ricocheting and all that sort of stuff. And they highlight that a lot of this trailer.
Yeah, like Brian said, last week, he wasn't familiar with this game. And like, that's kind of weird that that ricochet is like the very first thing they mention. And then you look at the trailer, you're like, oh yeah, you can see how literally bullet ricocheting is a core mechanic. Yep. Like, it's like the main mechanic in this game is how you can line up your shots properly to ricochet them as most efficiently as possible.
And, and then I believe like a SteamWorld, I forgot what the name of it is, but they released a SteamWorld game late last year that was like a city builder, part city builder and part like dungeon creator at the bottom of the city. That looked crazy. I didn't get to check that out yet, but that looked cool. I don't know how people felt about it, but I was like, man, that's insane. So yeah, so this was the first real like extensive look at the gameplay of SteamWorld Heist 2. Coming August 8th for pretty much every platform. Yep. We got a free update to Shiren the Wanderer, the Mystery Dungeon of Serpent Coil Island, which released earlier this year in late February. That adds more challenge dungeons, balance adjustments, and more. And have you looked at this, James, on what this new update will have?
Yes, so it's adding in some new challenge dungeons, and there's some, looks like there's some other balance updates.
I guess in the original game you could play as Kokatsu Shiren, or who's like a fox Shiren.
So basically,
but now you can play them in like another in another context.
Yeah, I kind of expected that, because basically the penultimate story dungeon, which was a post-game thing after the actual credits, you fused with this one god to become the Fox Shiren, so you could go into this other dungeon and like beat up another god. It was the whole thing.
Makes sense.
I did think it was weird that it was only available in that one dungeon. So when they said that they were adding in like additional stuff post launch, like additional content, I was like, yeah, they're probably going to have at least one other dungeon you can do this in. So it made sense. Like if I was a developer and I spent all this time making an entirely different play style with the Fox, I would want it to be playable in more than just one dungeon. So makes sense.
Yeah, so they also add like a challenge dojo challenge mode, which seems to be like more like puzzle-esque stages.
Also, they expanded interesting. The item storehouse from 180 items to 960.
Yeah, but yeah, like I already really, really enjoyed this game. I gave it a 9. Yeah, I was to be honest, I was pretty close to like to thinking about giving it like a 10, but like I wasn't sure if I should go there. But yeah, this, if you are at all a fan of Mystery Dungeon games, at all a fan of proper roguelikes, this is really good. I hope it gets ported to PC so more people can play it.
Okay, I have a question. Why is it specifically expanded to 960 items instead of like 999 or 1,000, which is like nicer numbers? Why specifically 960?
For a reason. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, I have no clue. I have no clue.
That's such a weird number. And then
I guess you could also say, why was it like 100, what was it, 160 at first?
180,
yeah.
Yeah.
That was also pretty specific, so.
They said there's a second update coming summer 2024 for this game, and they'll have more new content and functional improvements. So we'll see. We'll keep on looking for that.
I might take a second look at the game when that update drops. Maybe it is worth a 10 once everything gets added. But yeah, this is a really good game.
Cool. Yeah. I want to wait for the PC release because I know it'll get to come to PC eventually. Fuck. Finally, at long last, I think we have finally reached maybe the final update for Bloodstained Ritual of the Night version 1.5, coming May 9th on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC, and on May 16th for Switch.
It is the final major update. The reason I know this is that in that update post on the Kickstarter, they said, yeah, we're finally shipping out the physical copies for PC.
Holy crap. Damn, this is a long time in the making. This is
Of course, everyone that backed for PC got a digital code for PC. So it's like them sending out the physical copies now.
It's just making good on that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
I don't even know which version I backed. I know I got like a bunch of like art books and all this stuff from it. I also got the digital code, but I don't even remember what version I backed.
How long ago was that Kickstarter? It feels like a billion years ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time ago. That's why I can't remember.
Here's the thing. It was so long ago that originally they were planning to release it for the PlayStation Vita.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to say it was 2016. I think it was 2016.
Jeez, man.
Okay, there's an easy way to remember. You just got to think of Mighty Number 9. It's a year after that, maybe.
It's a year after Mighty Number 9.
It was 2015.
2015. Now I feel old.
Yeah, so that is, we're almost coming up to the 10-year anniversary of that Kickstarter.
finally, they can make Bloodstained 2 without having to worry about all the Kickstarter nonsense. Finally.
Did they
announce it technically that they're making Bloodstained 2?
I can't remember if they did.
Okay, so Bloodstained is published by 505 Games, which is actually kind of interesting because it's in a very similar boat as Aiden. In that it's a like a Japanese creative developed Kickstarter, almost like spiritual successor sort of game that when kickstarted didn't have a publisher, but then like 505 Games kind of came in and basically became the publisher. And as far as we know, I remember looking up 505 Games is like most successful games on basically on the heel of Aiden to see like where it ranked. And of course at the top you have stuff like Control, you have stuff like the PC port of Death Stranding, which is 505 Games, but Bloodstained is way up there. It's been very successful for them, and Aiden is pretty high up there too considering what it is. But I remember there was like so 505 Games, their actual like holding company is called Digital Bros. They're based in Italy, and I remember on one of their slides at one point they kind of just casually said in one of their reports, sequel on the way. And I think that was maybe wasn't intentionally meant to be like public, but it was we forgot we actually haven't announced this yet, and then people picked up on it, reported it, and then they basically said like, yes, we are working on a sequel. I need to go back and maybe double check some of the details there, but I'm pretty sure that what it was is that it sort of just appeared in a report kind of offhand, and then they kind of had to come back and say, yes, it's real.
Oh, there's like Bloodstained final chapter prologue or something.
Nah, this makes me feel ancient. I'm thinking like when KJ Inafune having that Kickstarter for like, what was it, like Red Ash or something?
Ash, and it basically fell through because people were so burnt from Mighty Number 9. It's going to be really interesting to see what Concept is cooking up with Fantasy Life I this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because that is sure. Level 5 Concept developing it.
Well, he finally fixed his reputation.
I'm really excited because like that means like we'll finally get to see a new EGO project, after this, because they spent all these years making good at the Kickstarter rewards or stretch goals.
Forget about Bloodstained. I want a spiritual successor to Tokimeki Memorial.
Okay, I just looked it up. I have to make one small correction. I was correct in saying that the Bloodstained in a document for Digital Bros back in 2021 said a second version is in development, which is sort of weird phrasing, like second version.
Second version?
Yeah, of Bloodstained. Is that a sequel or not?
Was that referring to the classic mode?
I wonder.
Because I know that they're also making another classic mode thing that's supposed to be a story type thing.
It was like I forgot which character it was. There was like the priestess lady. I remember there was like a Bloodstained like
Dominique.
Dominique. Yeah.
But anyways, they were reached out to about the sequel, and specifically in my article, I have Kotaku's article here. But actually, 505 Games didn't confirm or deny anything. They basically just said we don't have anything to say about Bloodstained. okay. So retract that a bit. But it's in a report. A couple years ago, they said a second version is in development, whatever that means.
Greatest hit edition, guys. Sorry.
I mean, look, at this point, with this update coming out, like, Bloodstained is a pretty fucking full-featured game. Version 1.5 adds Chaos Mode and Versus Mode, and these are basically... Chaos Mode is the local online co-op mode, so you can go play through the game with a friend or be matched with other players on the same system. And this, like, you can fight through a series of randomized rooms to defeat, enemies. So it's kind of like a survival co-op mode, which is really cool. And then versus mode is, as it says, it's a player versus player mode created for Bloodstained. At the beginning of the match, players enter a room exclusive to match battle. I wonder if it's like a score attack PvP. When you defeat the demons, you gain souls, and then, it's kind of like a more like a score attack sort of a PvP mode, which is cool. And then you're gonna add more premium free cosmetic packs, as well. And then there's So that's kind of the bulk of the update. They also mentioned, a premium downloadable content, Classic 2 Dominique's Curse. So, following the 1.5 update, they'll release a classic mode 2, which I guess will follow up on there's a classic mode that came out for the game, but it'll have a bigger map and its own canon storyline. So yes, it's
setting up for its sequel. Yep.
We'll see. So that's really, really cool. So that is Bloodstained Ritual of the Night version 1.5 coming throughout May for the various platforms.
So, with all these like Kickstarter games coming out, is there any news of those other Kickstarter games that recently started, like the Pennywise or whatever?
They're still in development. I know Pennywise in particular has like almost an Eiyuden Chronicle Rising-esque spin-off game that's in early access, and that instead of like being a Shadow Hearts like turn-based, I believe that's like an isometric game. So it's kind of like that following that Eiyuden Chronicle Rising esque thing, but it's in early access right now. So Wild Arms and Penny Blood are still in development. They got their money from a successful dual Kickstarter, and now they're just like providing monthly updates, I think, to the backers of like, hey, here's the current status of development of what we're working on. So it's kind of like in that kind of period of Eiyuden Chronicle
first, you know, had a successful Kickstarter. It's like now they're just focusing really on like just developing the game and releasing it in a great state. Hopefully, I assume like within the next like you know 2 to 3 years, we'll start getting real updates on like hey when are these games coming out? How are they looking? Just give them time, you know. Let the developers work on the game.
Yeah, I just haven't heard from it for a while, so I just don't know what was the status of those games. That's all.
They are going as expected. And I wish the development teams the best. I'm really looking forward to those spiritual successors when they come out. So hopefully they come out like you know they come out in a great state and are just like really fantastic games. Crossing my fingers. We got a new trailer, another new minor trailer for Shin Megami Tensei V Vengeance. They call it an ideal world. Just shows more gameplay of SMT5 Vengeance. Nothing really substantial there. I'll just say
that Atlus has kind of like zeroed in, and this isn't new, on this strategy for marketing is just to release a shit ton of trailers. Just all of
you
them.
Never look, I mean, you can never have enough. Yeah, you can never have enough.
So sure, you fill up, I mean, it makes sense. Like, you get basically a trailer. If they release one trailer, it shows up on a handful of different like channels, like the different platform channels and their own channel, then anyone else who decides to re-upload it. And then like you get all these different outlets, including ours, covering it. So it's you're basically getting kind of this broad spread of coverage every time you release a trailer, just to sort of remind people like, hey, this game's coming out. And
remember the cat clutch strategy just like a few weeks back? Yeah. Like, we're going to do an opening, a trailer for the opening animation. We won't say the release date. Then, like, a week later, we'll put a new trailer with the release date, and it's like at an event.
I'll say that the whole marketing strategy they had for Persona 3 Reload was actually brilliant. Yeah. Like, the whole thing where it's like, we're going to basically drop new trailers, new info every full moon. It's like, that is. That's smart because it's like,
It's certainly better than the Square Enix final trailers, guys. We'll just spoil everything that nobody even wants to watch.
If you podcast listener that's played Nioh: The World Ends With You, which I assume that all of our listeners to this podcast are people of great taste that have played Nioh: The World Ends With You, you should go watch that launch trailer for Nioh: The World Ends With You on the Nintendo YouTube and see when that was uploaded and consider just how much of the game that spoils a month before it came out.
Yeah, that reminds me, just as part of the Golden Week celebration, just a very minor thing that Square Enix like uploaded like a new like interview or something like that with like the with Windows VA from the world's video.
I saw that makes perfect sense, and I was sort of like, that's kind of weird because it's this game is a couple years old now. But
so here's the thing: like when I was at the Giant Bomb at Night party at Summer Games Fest last year, one of the people that was there was someone from Square Enix, and he actually told me that like Windows VA really wants to be able to talk about that game whenever he can. I wasn't surprised when I found that out, because it's like, okay, that makes sense. Tracks.
That's cool. Yeah. That game has awesome English voice acting, by the way. The cast did a really good job. Next up, we have Pharah: The Sundered Tribes to launch on PlayStation 4 and Xbox Series, in addition to PC. So there's like a platform announcement, and they showed off co-op gameplay on this. Is this the...
This is the, speaking of Star Renegade, which we mentioned earlier, this is that same developer.
Yeah, so I was trying to think of, like was this the developer? I remember, you expressed your disappointment. It was like, man, I wish they kind
I'm
of made a game.
I'm still a little bit disappointed. So this gameplay that they show, it's kind of Monster Hunter-ish in that it's like co-op, you're literally going out into the world into like an explorable zone and like, we're going to take out a Spike-tail doohickey, I forget what it's called, but some monster. And, like, similar in terms of pacing, in terms of, like, you know, you can take off, you can whack off different parts of the monster's body and whatnot and get loot and resources. The sort of the the key like component to this game that's try to set it apart is that there's a lot of aerial components and that you have like this glider that you can glide around the world in with a little bit more motion than say like Zelda or whatever. And like I said, I'm actually a little bit disappointed that like, you know, this game seems fine, but I really like that sort of retro 2D Sega Genesis style era aesthetic pixel art.
I feel you. So, but yeah, this definitely has a little bit of Monster Hunter Rise because of the wire bug movement that brought a little bit of Wild Hearts with the way that the atmosphere and the environments are. So it looks like I said totally fine, and like it's shaping up. It definitely is like still a game in development and so forth. So there could be some polishing can be done here and there, but you know, man, Star Renegade just made a very, very big impression. I know, I hear you, but this looks totally fine. You know, it looks cool. I would definitely, you know, if some of my friends were interested in trying it, like yeah, let's fucking play it. Like a good time. But yeah. Star Renegades is such it's a very visually distinct game.
Yeah, it won our best visuals in that year, 2020 or whenever that was.
That's right. They showed off a gameplay reveal trailer for Tales of Iron 2 Whiskers of Winter. I don't believe they there's no release date yet. It's still slated for this year. They just showed off, hey, here's the first footage of like extended gameplay footage.
I haven't played these games. Looking at the trailer, to me, as an outsider, and like this just looks like the first game.
Me too.
I'm sure there's differences
that
you could point out if you're more familiar than I am. But it's got that, it's that 2D side-scroller RPG-ish look, you know.
It's like comic book heavy action outlines.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks cool. But we're not the best at like, because none of us played the first one yet.
I like to think we're usually pretty good at touching on these indie RPGs or these smaller scale ones, but you know, there's just so many that
there's
sometimes
so many games and there's only like six of those.
We just didn't get a chance to try it out. So
it's okay. We're not superhuman. We just need to clone ourselves and then have that person just continually play games forever and share their experience with us. That's a normal thing. We have a report that deck builder RPG Gordian Quest is now available for PS5 and PS4. So this originally released on Steam in June 2022 after years of early access, and then this came to Switch in October 2023. So there's just expanding, you know, platforms. This seems to be like a deck builder RPG type game. But when I saw, I was like, oh, it looks a little bit like a Slay the Spire-esque. So that is now available on PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4. Next we have Dread Delusion, an open-world RPG, is launching out of Steam Early Access on May 14th. This is by developer Lovely Hellplace. Great name for developer. and published by Dread XP. Is like a first-person open-world RPG. It's sort of like Kingsfield a little
The PR explicitly says that.
Okay.
Yeah, they said it's like a mix between Kingsfield and Morrowind. So
that's definitely a mix.
yeah. I saw this like on Twitter, and we actually hadn't covered it before, and I was like, well, this looks really cool. I'd like to take a look at it. So I just put the news up, and then
What was that game that you guys talked about a few weeks back? The one that was like kind of like a Kingsfield lookalike?
Lunacy?
Last year.
Fun fact, the creator of Lunacy, Kira, actually helped on this project, I found out.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. So yeah, this game, that looks really, really... they kind of nailed the visuals of like... But I think of like Kingsfield and Morrowind, it's like, oh yeah, it does. You can see the inspirations within this game. They shot off some screenshots, a little bit of inventory, a lot of interesting stats. So aside from like your attack and defense and agility, you have a lockpick stat, a lore stat, a spellcast, charm, and barter stat. That's interesting. So, and then just the aesthetic of this game, this looks really cool. There's like a screenshot of like a snowfield and like a, like almost like a mechanical spider and like the core of the
side. It also looks like half like a, yeah, it looks like almost like a train. It has like a snow plow in the front or some shit.
Yeah, I just saw the snow plow. I'm like, wait a minute, it's like a tractor in front of it.
Yeah, like honestly, looking at the screenshots is what really got me interested, because like that is a striking art style.
Oh yeah. That's cool, man. Yeah, I wonder how people are liking it throughout early access.
Well, it's very positive on Steam, so right. that's something. Let's see.
And then they say that like there's a faction system as well in this game, so you can join or oppose like different factions, and then there's like a smithing and alchemy system to upgrade equipment.
Yeah, so recent reviews are 97% positive. It would be overwhelmingly positive, but there isn't enough reviews yet. So
how many do you need for that? 1,000 or 500?
I think it's 500, yeah, to get to overwhelming if the percentage is high enough. But yeah, this looks really good. I'm excited to give it a shot. I will definitely be writing up a review for this. I will definitely be writing up a review for this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what how it ends up.
And honestly, May is like the perfect month for a game like this.
Yeah.
Well, every like indie game is releasing in May. It feels like it's insane. It's like May was supposed to be my quiet month, and then it's like, oh hey, here's all of these indie games. It's like, ugh.
I think all the indies had the same idea. Like, okay, there's no big game coming out this month. We got to come out in May.
It's okay because the heavy hitters are here. A new Trails game is coming out this month.
Oh, wow.
That's right. Trails of Cold Steel, Northern War, mobile RPG.
God.
Launching on May 29th worldwide. And the screenshot we have the app screenshot is just a picture of Reen.
That's literally the Google Store, iOS App Store.
Wait, is that, fuck, what's his name? The dude from Trails in the Sky, first chapter, second
it's
chapter.
It's Richard. It's Alan Richard.
Okay. Is he fucking T-posing? And then
yes, there's a bug that caused all the characters to do like a T-pose while they're doing like S-pose.
and okay, so I need to ask. I hate myself for this, but this is canon, right? This is canon, right?
The story, I believe, is canon, but it's like kind of a weird thing because it covers a very, very small portion of the story. It's like when Reen blacked out during a battle. That's the battle
it's in between Cold Steel 2 and 3, which there's like a short like year or two time skip that you could try to shove a story in.
Yeah, that's where
it's there's like an anime about covering that, and everyone's like it's garbage, and there's this
this game is based off of that anime. So
a friend of mine who is a big Trails fan, I don't know why this just stuck in my head, they called the anime painfully lower than mid.
It's pretty bad. I tried to watch it too, and I'm like, it's not good.
I remember this gacha game for this one thing. It's this Alan T posing.
I never heard of the game ever again after it released in Japan after that bug. I never heard a single thing about it ever again. So I have no idea how it's doing in Japan.
They should just keep that bug in.
So, yeah. So,
well, anyways, I'm sure Chow has this pre-registered on all his devices.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I thought you were a Trails fan, Chow. What the
Not fuck? Anymore, guys.
Not I'm anymore. Suffer.
He famously loves Cold Steel 4. And he wrote a
That's true.
For it.
Mm-hmm. You can customize your ornament. Arrange quartz wisely. It says in a screenshot, Chow.
Just stack a bunch of Seuss cords so that no one can hit you.
In a screenshot, says, build your dream team, experience immersive battle, Chow. And it has
I love immersive battles. I should check this out.
We love immersive.
I want to immerse myself. I play Resident Evil with a VR set, okay?
In a screenshot with first chapter characters Joshua, Estelle, and Ren, it says start the new adventure featuring with top-notch voice actors, Chow. How can voice you not want
this? Voice actors not going to carry this game.
So if anyone's excited, let us know how it goes.
I apologize to people who are like actually genuinely excited for this. I don't know.
I'm not apologizing.
Look, I can't imagine there's any Trails fans that are into gacha games. I mean, not this gacha game.
Well, it's funny you say that, because didn't HoYoverse outright say that one of the main inspirations for Honkai Star Rail was fucking the Legend of Heroes Trails series?
You said Honkai Star Rail was a better battle system than Trails.
I mean, like, Trails fans playing their gacha games. Have you know anybody that are actually into Akatsuki no Kisuke? Like, the actual
gacha
games?
Didn't that game shut down?
That game was never localized, and it was, like, very, very, very mid.
Yeah,
it lived for a good amount of years and put out a shit ton of, like, alternate costume.
The only time I tried that is I remember I downloaded the Vita version on my Japanese account, and I was like, I'll give it a shot. And then it was like, oh yeah, no, it's not a native app. It streams it. And I was like, yeah, this is terrible. I'm deleting this right now.
I played it on a browser when it like came out. I'm like,
I don't mean like as in like Trails playing different gacha games. I mean, do they actually even like their like gacha games from their own franchise? That's what I meant.
Well, time to find out with the release of Trails of Cold Steel Northern War worldwide release on May 29th. Thank you, User Joy. Anyway, Astor Blade of the Monolith, formerly known as, what was the name of this? Monolith Requiem of the Ancients. This is the original name for the game. They recently renamed it Astor Blade of the Monolith. It launches on May 30th for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. It is an action RPG. It is an action RPG. That's all I really know about it. It's been developed by C2 Game Studio and published by Versus Evil. We have a gameplay trailer up on the site that announces the release date. It's a colorful action RPG with numbers flying out when you hit
the only thing, or not, I don't want to say, I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way, but this is developed by a Colombian studio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just interesting to me, you know, because it's not coming from like a country or place that you normally like associate with, like, oh, games come from here, you know, Europe or Japan or Americas or whatever. Like, oh, yeah, a game studio in Colombia, and this is their offering. It's, I think, what was that game I played? Chris Tale was also Colombian. Mm-hmm. So yeah, okay. Another Colombian game. That's interesting.
Yeah, I just don't know much about the game. Like, I've seen it here and there, but I just, like, but like, you know.
Looks like, yeah, cartoony kind of action. Yeah. You play as a little, like, cartoony little, like, he's like a wooden doll with a hoodie, with a feather or something.
The character design is cool. I do like the character design.
He's a little, like, wooden doll guy. He's kind of cool. He's got a little peg leg. I guess he's got two peg legs.
He's trying his best.
Yeah.
So that's out at the end of the month for everywhere. A game I checked out last PAX West, Dungeons of Hinterberg, launches on July 18th for Steam, Xbox Series, and Xbox Game Pass. That is exciting to me because I liked what I played on this game.
It looks neat.
Yeah, it's based in the Austrian Alps, based by made by an Austrian studio. Microbird Games, published by Curve Games. I wrote a preview up on the site. It has a pretty interesting premise of, like, hey, you get to explore, like, these different, like, four biomes, and you find dungeons across them. And then there's, like, light social sim elements that are a little bit like Persona. You get to chat with people in town, raise your relationship with them to gain various, like, stat-ups and, like, functions. But Dev has a really, really nice look at this, the debut game by Microbird Games. So
yeah, it looks neat. I want to try it, but like June, July especially, there is too many RPGs, so I won't guarantee I'll be able to check it out, but I will. Well, you know, I'll give it a shot. Well, on Game Pass, I can't guarantee I'll beat it.
Actually, Junior was interested in this too, and he wants to review it, so
Well, I said it's on Game Pass, so I'll be able to play it regardless.
We'll see who ends up, you know, checking it out for the site, and hopefully, you know, it turns out to be awesome. You also have another RPG, turn-based cyberpunk rhythm RPG, Keylocker, launches in summer 2024 for Xbox Series and PC. This is the first time I've heard of this game, so
That's actually kind of funny, because it's been kind of floating around for, like, 4 years. So this is from Munana, who is the developer behind Virgo versus the Zodiac, which came out several years ago, that was sort of like a, it was like Mario and Luigi type of combat game. Yeah, Keylocker was originally announced in June 2020, and it's like, yeah, rhythm, turn-based RPG, cyberpunk, obviously, with that sort of purple-green color palette. I know they've actually have changed, like, if you look at some of the old, actually, I'm not even sure if you can, but the developer changed, like, the perspective of combat, like, pretty significantly from announcement to now. And, like, I was going to say, if you could find old trailers compared to the new ones, or, like, it looks quite different than what it used to, very changing a lot during development. But this is a kind of an important update because they've announced, like, a publisher, Serenity Forge, which Serenity Forge is based in France. They do a lot of these sort of indie game publishing. In fact, I think they published the physical, or they published the console versions of Virgo versus the Zodiac. But yeah, so they actually call this trailer an announcement trailer, which is, that's pretty typical for indie games. Like, even though this isn't technically like the game's announcement, it is an announcement in the sense that's like the first time the publisher is mentioning it. So like, it's right, like the publisher announcing it. But yeah, so this comes out later this year.
It's more like a formal thing for like the publishers that they were adding this to our catalog of games that we're publishing. Another a long-awaited indie game coming out soon this summer, and hopefully it is successful. From the trailer, the announcement trailer, it does look really cool. It has a very distinct look, has a lot of things going on, and yeah, hopefully that shapes up to be an awesome game. And that is the podcast. That is the
okay. So we have to quit. We have to stop the podcast in the next like 5 minutes, so we can be sub 2 hours. Okay.
Oh, right. Of course. But yeah. Thank you for listening to us here on the TetraCast. We appreciate your support. If you have any feedback, obviously leave us a comment over wherever you're listening to this podcast. We always like to hear from you. Thank you, James. Thank you, Chow. Thank you, Adam, for joining me here on this week's podcast. Like I said, it was a much quieter week. Might be a quieter month in general, which is fine.
Yeah, we need this, honestly.
Yeah, we really do. A lot of us are basically doing catch up.
Like, I just started playing Persona 3 Reload last week just because like so much came out in February and March. Like, all right, now I can finally have time to play this. So
later on this week, I guess pertaining to me, there's going to be a new station for Gundam Breaker 4. They might announce something new for Gundam Breaker 4. So that's important for me, probably not for anyone else. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say there. Other than that, there's not other like any events around the corner that I know of. And yeah, you can find us on our site at rpgsite.net. You can find us over on Twitter/X at rpgsite. I guess Alex finally put in the blood money to get a blue check mark for our account on that site. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/rpgsitenet, youtube.com/rpgsitenet. You can find us on your favorite podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, etc. Join us on Discord at discord.gg/rpgsite. Always an active community there, talking about whatever the news of the day is. And it's a lovely community. Love hearing what people have to say there and all that sort of stuff. Until next time, Brian should be back, and we'll have a whole new load of news topics to talk about, hopefully. I don't know if there's going to be any new games. I don't know if there's any actually new games coming out this week.
I was looking up. I only have two RPGs listed as coming out this week. King Arthur Legion 9, which is like kind of like a sequel spin-off of King Arthur. Oh, shoot. I forget what the other game was called.
I forgot.
King Arthur Knight's Tale, which is like a tactical RPG from NeoCore Games. And then also Cryptmaster comes out this week, which is sort of like a vocabulary dungeon crawler that I know James was interested in. So
I think the game that I'm interested in next week, I think it was called Some Kind of Rabbits or something. It's that one that looks Rabbit like a Final Fantasy. Yeah, I think that was it. Like, it looks like a raid simulator or something like that.
But yeah, Rabbit of Steel, yeah, I got to check that out at PAX West. Had a great interview with the developer there. I'm looking forward to that as well. Like, several friends and I are definitely going to pick that up at launch and play it together. It is demo's a lot of fun, very challenging. I totally forgot that Rabbit and Steel was just around the corner. So that's going to be the game to look forward to for me. Other than that, we'll be playing catch-up on RPGs for pretty much the rest of the month. I have Saga Emerald Beyond I still have to get through. I have to get through Sandland. I plan on doing Sandland next, right after writing up this Megaton Musashi W review. I'm like in the early parts of that. Eventually I'll get around to Stellar Blade. I still have to finish Unicorn Overlord. I still have to finish Persona 3 Reload. I'm having a grand time. I'm having a great time. Once again, thank you for listening to us, and that is the podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.